Mini episode 1743 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1743. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris coming at you. And we have with us here today one of our favorite FDH Lounge dignitaries, my good pal, FDH Hoops analyst Ben Chu. And it's that time every 4 years when we have the Olympic basketball tournament, specifically this time the 2024 Olympic basketball tournament in Paris. And this looks to be the most star-studded one ever. Team USA bringing in a lot of the big names from the previous generation, some from the generation that's coming up now, and a lot of the best players in the world. Granted, they're scattered on different teams. A USA versus the world game would really be pretty incredible right now, and I think I would probably bet on the world if that were the case. But they are split up any number of different ways among different countries, but there is enough star power out there to where it's not necessarily a given that this loaded Team USA is going to come away with the gold, even though obviously they're going to be the favorites. And who better to break it down with than my aforementioned great friend, Ben Chu. Ben, welcome to the show, buddy. And again, this Olympic basketball tournament is going to be pretty swank.
Yeah, it's going to be a really interesting one. And as obviously, I am saddened we are not having to do another Summer League semifinal championship game preview to fill up for the Olympics instead.
Yes, exactly. Something that actually demands the space. Wouldn't be a bad idea probably to hit NBA transaction developments here at some point, but that can wait until after the Olympics. It's been a busy summer as far as that goes, with player movement between teams, player retention in some cases with extended contracts. But the eyes of the entire basketball world turned to Paris and this tournament that's going on here. And again, there had been this kind of sense in the last year or two or three of some of the old heads, as it were, with Team USA, the guys who've been on previous prominent USA teams, LeBron and Steph and Durant and a couple of them. Let's put the band back together one more time to try and go get some more Olympic gold. And they have done that. Anthony Davis, a player from that generation roughly as well. A couple of others in here. And then some of the newer ones from today. Some of the more emerging stars, Devin Booker, Bam Adebayo, Tyrese Halliburton, and of course Anthony Edwards, who I think was in the conversation for best player in the world coming out of the NBA playoffs this year. So Team USA, again, they can go old, they can go young, they can go big, they can go small. There aren't really a lot of chinks in the armor as far as this team goes. They seem pretty impervious.
Yeah, and I think, again, the big question's going to mainly be, and it's the question that's been talked about most during this tune-up, I guess you call them preseason or, you know, just, you know, like exhibition matches before the Olympics, is the whole discussion of who will be starting at the five spot for Team USA. Will it be Joel Embiid? Will it be Anthony Davis? Will Bam Adebayo maybe get a look at one point later on if Team USA is struggling? Because if we are to look at the one minor weakness of Team USA, is just interior scoring. They had this issue during the FIBA World Cup that they got out-rebounded and out-muscled by a lot of these teams like Germany, Canada, with their front line. So if there was an issue to say with Team USA, it would be that. And again, this is a question we always ask every year, especially since the iteration of the failure in 2004 for Team USA, which would be, you know, that Olympics where they had a lot of great superstars, but it didn't really mesh well together. I think this team has great team chemistry overall. But again, I do feel like there is a lot of sizable, I would say, basketball egos on this team. So it's going to be very interesting to see if they get into a game early where they have a heavy deficit, who's going to be the one to either try to take them out of it or how is Steve Kerr going to adapt his lineups to some of these teams maybe playing small against Team USA?
Well, I think I want to take a blend of two of the things that you said there. When you're talking about the situation with the size with Team USA and also the egos there, if I'm Steve Kerr, I don't want any part of this conversation, but it is inevitable. You've got to pick between AD and Embiid. I mean, imagine telling one of these guys, hey, sorry, you're coming off the bench. I would not look forward to that.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be very interesting because on paper, Joel Embiid is probably the best big man on this roster, but so far during these exhibition matches, he hasn't looked that great. And we all know he is still coming back from the injury he suffered with Philadelphia this year, so I would logically think AD, but I also understand Kerr's thought process that if Davis comes off the bench, he's going to face significantly weaker rosters for some of these other teams and these other groups. So in my opinion, I don't think there's a perfect answer here, but again, it's weird to say when you have a guy who's a former MVP, a guy in Anthony Davis, who I think what over the last 2 or 3 years we'd say is in the top three of best big men in the league. The interior play is the big question mark, but it's just mainly because the guards and the perimeter players for Team USA are just so good.
I would agree with that, and that's one of these things where, in looking at the roster here, this is where it can be kind of deceiving when you're trying to kind of sum up, as I was previously here. I guess I lumped Anthony Davis in with the old heads and Devin Booker and with the sort of younger generation of players. And I look at this and there's like 3 years, 3.5 years worth of difference between them. Anthony Davis born March of 93, Devin Booker born October of 96. So just to correct myself on that, I guess it's because Devin Booker, relative to Anthony Davis, was a little bit of a slower kind of a burn towards becoming the player that he is. AD was pretty much the player that he was immediately upon coming into the league. And I guess that's why I sort of think of him that way. But yeah, Team USA has a lot of different options here. And like you said, very, very strong on the wings, the guard play, forward play, everything except the centers. And not that they are, as you said, a weakness. You're not saying that they're a weakness. But again, if you're going to pick out an area for other teams to try and attack, you're absolutely right. By process of elimination, that would be the one. You start looking at some of the other teams in the tournament here that are competitors for the gold medal, and the center position is what jumps out at you. You know, you've got, obviously, the Joker playing for Serbia. You've got the combo of Wemby and Gobert playing for France, etc., etc. So this is going to be a very key point of interest as far as some of the other matchups they're going to have with these teams.
Right, and also the current FIBA World Cup champion Germany also has a sizable duo down there with the Wagner brothers, and then you also have Oops as well. So it's going to be one of the things that teams are going to try to attack. And I also think one thing we may see, because again, Rick, this is a FIBA game. This is a much shorter game. I liken it more towards a summer league style of play with less stoppages. It would not shock me to see a lot of these teams, especially in Group C, to start, because it is clearly, out of the three group Olympic men's basketball groups, the weakest group of the three. It would not shock me to see some of these teams like South Sudan, Serbia, and Puerto Rico just try to run the USA team and try to make this into a three-point shooting contest more than anything else.
Sure. I mean, that's what you might as well try and do, and you're right about that with Group C, because you can just look at this right now and just think to yourself that, I mean, barring something really extraordinary, it's going to be the United States and Serbia coming out of this one. You go to Group B, and it gets a little bit more competitive. France, Germany, Japan, Brazil. I look at this, and I think France and Germany are the strong favorites here. Do you think that there's any chance whatsoever, a puncher's chance, for Japan or Brazil to come through?
I mean, I would use the rule, just looking at the overall rosters for both of those, you know, just looking at the rosters for that group, Rick, Brazil has some good players, you know, a lot of guys who had cups of coffee in the NBA. You got Raul Denso, Didi Lozada, Christian Felicio, Bruno Caboclo, who's still 4 years away from being 4 years away. And Japan, they have notable players too, Yuta Watanabe, Rui Hashimura, who plays for the Lakers currently. So I don't see with those teams any major upsets. But again, as we know, when we talk about the FIBA tournament, if you have talent and you can hit three-pointers and you can slow other games down. So I find it almost impossible in Group A or Group B to rule anyone out because any team can get hot at any point. And
sure.
I'd be remiss not to mention this at this point. I think this is a fair assessment. This is the most of the 12 teams in this tournament right now. Every single one of them has at least two current or former NBA players on their roster. So,
yeah,
just in terms of what many people believe that the NBA is the best league in terms of top overall talent, that's how big the game has grown and how international the NBA has become. Because years ago, it was shocking even to get one or two NBA players on some of these other teams, and now you have such wide depths of rosters now that you're seeing teams like Canada send 10 guys, Australia sending 9 guys.
Yeah.
You know, so 9 NBA players. So it's not a tough thing. I would say it would be very shocking to me to see France and Germany not go through in there just because of everything. I could see Brazil being possibly a sleeper pick because they do have a lot of talent. I think Japan's an interesting team. But essentially, my real concern for them is you're putting a lot on Rui Hachimura and Yuta Watanabe to win. And I do feel like when you have two powerhouses in a group like this, I think the logic stands to dictate that they will get through to the next round.
You would have to think so, yeah. And again, it's not just NBA talent that is on these teams. It's how strong the NBA talent is in some instances. You've got Nikola Jokic for Serbia, who I think is presently the best player in the world, anchoring that team. You've got, I would say, France way more so than Mo Wagner for Germany as far as star talent goes. As I said, the aforementioned French twin towers of Wemby and Gobert. And then in Group A, this is one of these things where if I'm one of these countries, I got to be looking at this saying, blind draw my left teat. How did I end up in Group A? Because Australia, Greece, Canada, Spain, and in particular, some of the star power in this one here with Greece, of course. Hey, what do you know? There's a guy named the Greek Freak that plays for Greece. What are the odds of that? And then for Canada, SGA, Jamal Murray, among others. So you have some of the best players in the world that are actually suiting up for some of these other teams here, too. But again, Australia, Spain, they've been very, very strong in international play in recent times here. Group A really, really looks like the one where, you know, you put them all in a tumbler and you kind of pull out for whoever you think it's going to be. My guess would be, gun to my head, Australia and Canada to come out of this one, but ultimately, who knows?
Yeah, and again, it speaks to depth of talent. And we saw during the exhibition season for Team USA, Australia gave them the best game so far, and I think I would say one of the sleeper teams to possibly knock USA out of the tournament if they were to meet because of just the depth of roster that they have. They have 9 guys who currently play in the NBA, and they have a lot of young, flexy, sort of bit, you know, long wing guys like Josh Green, Dyson Daniels, Giddy as well, and then you got, you know, Patty Mills, who's a longtime player. Then the one thing I will say is that for their big guys, Rick, of Jock Landale, Will Mangue, and a guy who played for Portland last season, Duop Reed, they're all very underrated basketball players. So I don't think Australia is the, you know, favorite outside of Team USA, but I do feel like that's arguably their worst matchup on paper.
Okay. And in terms of, are there any aspects of Team USA in particular that may leave them vulnerable to this matchup?
I think just because essentially Australia plays this sort of 40-minute breakneck pace, shoots a lot of threes, and on top of that, too, they have great interior scoring with Rondale and Reith and Will Mangue, too. It's just what I feel like in terms of how Australia is that they're tough, they're scrappy, and they have a lot of NBA players on that roster. And the one thing I can note, too, is that one of the guys that, even though he's bounced around now, Dyson Daniels is a very good perimeter defender. Same thing with Josh Green at the NBA level. So I feel like they match up a little bit better in certain cases. I would say there are other teams with better overall talent, I'd argue, like Canada, Germany, and France all have higher talent. But I almost feel like Australia is just one of those teams that they're scrappy, they make big plays, and they have the NBA talent to get to match up with Team USA.
Yeah, I could very well see that being the case. because, again, they have, in terms of the style of play, it is one of those things where looking at some of the games that have taken place thus far, there were a lot of folks on Twitter who delighted in pointing out, and I delighted in reading this, that seeing Delly lock up Steph Curry brought back some fond memories of the 2010s, Ben Chu.
Yeah, and I also, the one thing too with Australia too is we, I mean, two guys we haven't really even mentioned yet, Dante Exum and Josh Giddey, have both played well so far in these exhibition matches and are, you know, NBA guys. They're kind of an inverse situation. Giddey's coming off of his issues last season, his personal issues last season, and Exum coming back from major injury. Like, they have a lot of top flight talent. I think, Rick, honestly, we all know this. Like, I think Canada right now overall has the, outside of Joker and Team USA, Canada has the best player right now in Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. And it's going to be interesting with guys like Dylan Brooks, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, who are great defenders. The issue for Canada, and I feel like this is a very obvious one, and you saw it in the U.S. basketball showcase for the first exhibition match, is that they just have a supreme lack of size right now. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're starting at essentially center at this point around Kent Burch and Trey Lyles and Dwight Powell and Kelly Olynyk.
Yeah.
So I feel like the teams that will take advantage of Team USA the most are teams like France, teams like Germany, and teams like Australia who have good low post players who can get baskets. Because that really then a lot that forces Team USA, because if I would say anything at the outset for this Team USA team, the two biggest weaknesses I see just in general would be interior scoring, and I would just say overall team defense. And that would, I'm not saying that there isn't great defenders on Team USA.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel like for some of these rosters who play like multiple years together over the summer, they do have a team defensive advantage because they have worked together for.
Mm-hmm. I would agree.
And Team USA essentially gets together over a summer. So
yeah.
Even if we trot out the 12, 15 best guys in the NBA or our top players, there does seem to be continuity does matter a lot more in the Olympics than we think.
It does. And again, like you said, a lot of these teams have played together multiple times, and it is a situation where Kelly Olynyk, not to be bitter, but if popping somebody's shoulder out of the socket was a gold medal winning thing here, that guy would be probably walking away with 6 golds at the end of this competition. But yeah, Canada could stand to be a little bit stronger in the pivot, and that is one of the things that I think is going to keep them from going all the way in this thing, although they could go deep. Because and that's the whole thing here too, that some of these teams that are a little bit top heavy in terms of star power, because again, you're looking at SGA and Murray and one or two others versus a team like Australia that I think you said, what, they've got like 9 guys that have played in the NBA?
Yeah, 9 guys to play. Well, the thing too is that both Canada and Australia have the same number of guys.
Oh, okay.
Roughly the same number of guys in the NBA, but I'd make the argument that Australia is the more balanced team.
Yeah.
Just because of the guys who are playing underneath for them are either great defenders or Jack Londo, who's had a cup of coffee in the NBA with the Spurs at one point, who was tearing up the Australian league. So it's a tough thing because, in my opinion, both of these teams are very tough. I just think Australia has a little bit more experience than this Canadian team, and I'm sort of, if you look at the strength of Australia, which is shooting threes and perimeter defense against Canada, who is a great perimeter offense, but not exactly the greatest perimeter defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be interesting. And I mean, there will, and again, we also know this too. There's also always a scenario where we'll throw in teams like Greece and Serbia, who have 2 former MVPs. If they can dominate in the Olympic setting, there's no question that they can definitely put up a fight against a Team USA team, because ultimately, and we've seen this before, sometimes the most talented Team USA teams don't do as well.
Sure.
Against like a single power individual. Now, Alibi, I'd make the argument that in this case, neither Giannis or Nikola Jokic has the talent around them to really make it out of their groups consistently. But again, it's going to be interesting. And I mean, one team that we haven't really talked about yet, that's been kind of flying under the radar, but I'm very intrigued to see how they match up with Team USA, which is Puerto Rico.
Okay.
Initially, you look at that roster, and it's not that great of a roster. The most notable guy there is Jose Alvarado, the backup point guard for the Pelicans. But you also have some guys who played in the NBA and played over in Europe, like you got guys who have played in the NBA, like, you know, like Damon Reed and Jordan Howard and Tremont Waters. So I'm intrigued because watching Puerto Rico during their qualifying, they played a very fast tempo. It was very up and down the entire game.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a scenario, and we've seen this in the past when Team USA does lose, if a team gets hot from three and USA struggles for whatever reason, you can win or lose any basketball game in a 40-minute FIBA-style rule. So
sure.
I'm not saying Puerto Rico is going to beat Team USA, but I do feel like they're a very interesting team in that group.
Well, stylistically, one of the things, because I would agree with you, I mean, if you want to go for the puncher's chance, you try and overwhelm Team USA with pace. But this is one of these things where when you and I are talking about NBA playoff basketball, and particularly when I'm talking about my favorite team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm always agitating for a wider rotation. And I think that was one of the things that J.B. Bickerstaff needed to do better. That from listening to the Cavs' new coach, Kenny Atkinson, he's saying that he may go with a 10-man rotation a lot of times here. So as much as this is something that I agitate for in regular NBA basketball and in the playoffs, you don't have to sit here and agitate for it during the Olympics, because Steve Kerr politically can't really ignore anybody that's on this team. I mean, you're going to have a couple guys that have lesser minutes than the other guys, but that's one of the things that's going to give the USA a chance to respond on this, is that it's a little bit harder to run down USA when you've got a number of guys out there on the floor that are probably going to be in the low 20s in terms of minutes.
Right, and I think just with overall with Team USA is that the minute balance is going to be a big thing, but I also, to be honest too, Rick, this Team USA roster doesn't strike me anyone having any massive egos or anything along those lines, so it the question ultimately is going to become is how do you balance the first unit and then the second unit, and where do guys fit essentially, because just on depth of talent alone, Team USA knocks all these other teams out of the water, essentially.
Yes, I would agree.
But then the question you're going to have to ask is that a lot of these guys are all-star, superstar players on their own roster. And the question that I always bring up to people is that it's a different, and one of the justifications for, like, why do Team USA teams lose during the World Cup, which is when you're the guy on a roster for a basketball team, and you're the guy, you're used to how it's run for you. You're used to getting 20, 30 shots a game. If you're now essentially, I'll just use Anthony Edwards, whether he's starting or not, he's going to get significantly less shots with LeBron and Curry out on the floor.
True.
At any given time or whatever, or whoever you want to say, Jason Tatum or Tyrese Haliburton. So it's going to be very interesting because that's the one issue that Team USA has that no other team has on this roster. Like, I'm pretty sure there's a hierarchy on all these other teams.
Right.
And for Team USA, it's 12 incredible superstar players who deserve to be there. But at the same point, the question you do have to ask is outside of maybe Derek White, everyone else is the best player on their franchise.
You just gave a great counterpoint.
Essentially White and Holiday are kind of the same, but
sure.
Essentially they're lead man, essentially.
Yeah, and White.
And I do wonder at some point is if Team USA ever gets into a game where a team jumps out on them by 20 or 30 points, if it turns into a little bit of star ball at the end and not sharing, and that can definitely cause a Team USA team to lose.
Yeah, and White and Holiday and maybe to some extent Bam Adebayo are guys that are here to, like you said, kind of play a role, so to speak. As opposed to what the other nine guys are doing. But you just gave an incredible...
Yeah, nine guys that were back.
Yeah, true. You gave an incredible counterpoint to what I was saying, because I was saying, well, you're not going to run down Team USA stamina-wise, but then your counterpoint is very, very compelling, and maybe the thing to be afraid of the most if you're a Team USA fan is that, okay, so you're going to have the guys rotating in and out so that the pace doesn't kill you if somebody's trying to run up the pace on you, but how do you get enough guys and in this case, it could be two or three. That's all you need, if that. In tempo, how do you get, like, you know, as far as the scorer's touch for a game, you know, sometimes you need a couple of touches to be able to get your tempo going and to be able to be in rhythm scoring wise. Yeah, that could be a thing where if you're having to be too small D democratic as far as spreading the ball around in terms of having to rotate guys in and out, you may not have enough guys that have the shooter's touch going in any particular game. So that could make it difficult.
Right. And again, that's the benefit and the negative at the same time.
Sure. Yeah.
The benefit is that the U.S. team has the deepest depth of talent I think we've seen in a while for the Olympics.
Yep.
But the problem is that if it's going to be continuity, because that's the one thing this Team USA team does not have.
That is true.
Or what I like to say is, like, I feel at this point Team USA is probably 80% likely to win the gold medal this year.
Mm-hmm.
And if they lose it, the two things that I think are going to be the most glaring is inside scoring and continuity of roster.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, in looking at that scenario, it's really interesting, isn't it? Because if the shots aren't falling from outside, if it's one of those things where a team is dictating pace and it's like, okay, we got to have a churn here so that we don't have some of our guys with the tongues hanging out of our mouths, and they're having to get that churn going, and you don't have enough chances for guys to be able to get in rhythm out there, you're going to have to disproportionately go inside a little bit more. So it's going to be maybe being forced to rely on Davis and Adebayo and Embiid to a certain extent to try to get the easier buckets. So that's what's interesting, is that it could very well play into that, and you might have to make the thing that is, relatively speaking, a weakness, and that's, again, relatively speaking, in all caps, but you might have to try to make that a strength if you get into a situation like this where a team's trying to run you off the court.
Right, and I think the good thing for Team USA is that they are in the weakest of the three groups, so they're going to get an opportunity to get their sea legs around them. In most scenarios, Rick, Serbia is the only team that I think has a legitimate chance of beating Team USA at any point in the group stage.
Yes.
So they'll have their chance to get their sea legs about it. This is also a fair question to ask, which is, Team USA is going to be in one of the weaker groups overall. How will that impact them heading into the knockout round stages?
Well, that's true. You know, the glass jaw syndrome.
It's an interesting question because the Heat could get turned on very, very quickly. And I do not really see a scenario unless Jose Alvarado turns into the second coming of, becomes, excuse me, Puerto Rican Steph Curry. I see Team USA probably winning all of these games by 20-plus margins. And the question we have to ask, just if we gamify this out, is like, if you have three games that are relatively easy, then you go into the tournament and you face much tougher opponents. It's the weird double-edged sword for Team USA, and that's what makes Olympic basketball so interesting now, is that since the talent now is so good and so widespread across the world right now, it's not what it used to be, which was essentially Team USA and one or two teams that could compete with them, and that was it.
Right, yeah.
There's at least, I would make the argument, four of the five teams in the A and B bracket that have a legitimate shot to win a single, and people need to remember this too, the Olympics is one off, so it's not series, it's not, you know, best of three or best of five.
Yeah.
One, and we've seen this, and I, the reason why I joke about Summer League and I bring it up, though, is that I've seen watching enough Summer League games over the years that these 40-minute games have a different pace to them. And it's a lot harder to come back from a big deficit. And I think the biggest thing that a team to beat Team USA would have to do is put up a big first half.
Yeah.
Get them on their heels by down 20, 25 points. And then just kind of hold the lead until the end of the game.
Well, that's it. Yeah. I mean, you know, Team USA, if that were to happen, I could easily see a situation where these guys go on tilt and start jacking up threes, and then again, if not enough of them have their shooting touch on a given night, it could make it worse. So yeah, I mean, there is the possibility of a glass jaw coming out of Group C. I do think Serbia is going to give them a heck of a game. I look for that one to be very competitive. But this is a thing where, again, looking at the larger sort of strategy of this thing, for the USA playing Serbia, or, you know, potentially later on in this thing, you know, if you're playing Canada, if you're playing France, and I'm looking at it out of the two Twin Towers, looking at Wemby as being the real threat offensively. I mean, if you're playing a team that's got one of the best players in the world, I mean, I would assume under these circumstances, you double team, triple team, and you make the other guys beat you.
Right, and I think it just overall, just discussion points, Rick. Based on FIBA rankings, France is the second best team in this. And overall, they have the most, I'd make this argument, outside of Team Canada, they have the most NBA star power on their team with Wemby, with Rudy Gobert. You also have, I mean, it's kind of a laundry list of guys who've played in the league. Evan Fournier, Frankie Smokes, Frank Ntilikina, Batum is also on that roster. Washington's top draft pick last year, Bilal Coulibaly. And then you got, you know, guys like who are a little bit longer in the teeth, but essentially have been there for almost ever, which Nantetokounmpo and Gersan Ubaselli. So if you're looking at it holistically, I would make the argument that France on talent has the best chance to beat Team USA. But I almost feel like stylistically Australia, it's a tougher matchup.
I see that. I could very well see that. And that's one of those things where, I mean, I referred to this before, probably White and Holiday and Adebayo are probably the closest things for Team USA. But one of the things that's frightening about France is, I mean, isn't Batum like the prototypical, like, all-star role player to be in a situation like this? I go back to the 2016 Cavs, as I'm often wont to do, and Tristan Thompson said, you got to be an all-star in the role that you're in. And that was what he was when he was at his very best. And like Batum's like the prototypical guy like that. And you talk about, again, the chemistry of these teams that play together internationally a long time. Wemby is, of course, not that, as a guy who just, you know, recently got to the NBA and is, you know, eligible for the Olympics and everything. But like Batum is one of those glue guys that should be very frightening to Team USA in that sense.
Right. And he's one of those guys that will play a role. And I would note, let us not sleep at the end of the day on guys like Rudy Gobert and Evan Fournier, who have been long-term NBA players.
Sure.
And you can even throw in Frank Ntilikina, too, who have been long-term NBA players who are great in their own individualized roles at periods of time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be very interesting, and I feel like the narrative is that this will be a cakewalk for Team USA, but the one thing I've seen in the media that is giving a lot of credit, these international teams are loaded with more talent than ever before.
They are. Yes, they are. And that's what makes this really such a treat. I mean, this is a thing where, again, this does not rise, in my estimation, to Olympic hockey when it's at its best. And I understand that in 2026, we're going to return to the NHL guys coming back. That's a thing where the distribution between countries is way more equal. And that's what makes it sort of a mini all-star tournament between about really five or six teams. You don't really have anybody that's the standout favorite the way the Team USA is in this basketball tournament. But this is probably the closest that we're going to get to something like that. This is the closest we're going to get to that level of star power being out there in all these other countries. I mean, maybe if we continue to get the international diversification here, you know, you've seen it in the draft the last 2 years with international guys going very high, albeit one of them was Alex Saar going second overall this year, and we see what his summer league looked like. But this may be the high water mark for something like this as far as the international teams being able to really sort of come at Team USA. But that's what, whether it is or it's not, who knows what the future is going to be, but that's what makes this, again, to guys like me and you, the most compelling Olympic basketball tournament I think that we've ever seen.
Right, and we're only, let's look down the line of 2028, 2032, those are going to be very compelling as well as a lot of these younger teams like Canada, and you can even throw in, and, you know, you're going to see France for a while with that young, deep roster. It would not shock me. Also, Australia is probably going to get a couple guys during this timeline, too. So it's going to be very interesting to see moving forward how much the talent gets better, because we never know. We're 8 years down the line. We could be talking about someone who could be turning the tide for any of these other teams.
Well, that's true. I mean, and certainly, again, looking at his own trajectory, I mean, Wemby, if any of these other guys, I mean, if Reza Shea turns out to be somebody that's a high-level player, you know, it wouldn't take too many guys to pair with Wemby to really make France a legitimate rival to the USA, as opposed to a team that's got a solid chance to beat them in a game. But maybe parity with Team USA who knows? But yeah, it would probably take a couple more big-time French players by 2028, 2032. But on the trajectory that they're on, who's to say that it's not going to happen? I mean, this is the hottest streak that France has been on, or that really any international country has been on for churning out talent probably in some while, as opposed to Canada, which I think over the course of the last 12 to 15 years, they've had a pretty good trajectory of this. And again, this is one of these things where in terms of looking at the tournament, everything that you've said about the glue of teams that have been together, played together an awful lot, that is very compelling. In the end, I'm looking at it here, and I do think that star power is going to count for an awful lot. Maybe it's very chalky chalkerson of me, but I'm saying Team USA gold, France silver, and let's say Canada for bronze. Do those seem like reasonable picks?
I think those sound like reasonable picks to me, Rick. The only thing that I would change is I might put Australia in that bronze, but I feel like it's going to be some combo of those four teams at the end of the day, Rick. USA, France, Australia,
Canada.
And Canada, yeah.
And in looking
I
at
feel the... like that's it's going to be some amalgamation of those four things, and then maybe Germany is also a sleeper team that also will be in there. So
is it basically sort of Germany, Greece, Serbia? If anybody else is going to claw into that,
I would think so at this time. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's going to make and again Group A.
And again, the big thing going to come down to this will be seeding.
Yes.
And the pathway for some of these teams to go on to the next round, because the looking at the knockout stages, there's going to be a lot of tough opening round matches for teams.
Yes, and that's where again. If Australia, if they make it in, then having somebody take them out before it comes to a Team USA game could be very key, which it sounds weird to say about avoiding an Australia matchup, avoiding an anything matchup if you're Team USA. But like you said, stylistically, that's going to be a thing. It will be very, very odd for me if it comes to that game, watching Delhi locking up on Steph Curry and not being able to root for Delhi. I've got a lot of muscle memory from 2015 to 2018, Menchu.
Very true. I mean, also to just to like look at just the overall totality, because I feel like Germany does that. They have a lot of good young. They have a lot of good young talent on that team, and then on top of that, too, Dennis Schroeder, who was the MVP of the World Cup, is also going to be one of their main leaders. So it's going to be very. It's going to be interesting to see. I know they have an exhibition game coming up with Team USA in a couple of days, so it's going to be very interesting to see how that this. Version of Germany faces up with this version of Team USA.
Yeah, and if there's a Germany USA game, it's going to be funny to see some of the faces. Like if Schroeder actually goes off, it's going to be funny to see the faces of guys like LeBron and Tatum. Like, oh, now he does it, huh? Now this guy shows up.
but overall, too, I do think Rick, this is. Feels almost like it. We're set up for a USA France battle in the championship game. But with the most depth of talent, it would not shock me if Team USA makes it to the finals and someone else is standing in their way.
Very possibly, yes. And just in looking at the presentation of this, I think that we can consider this a little bit of a sneak preview of a little bit more than a year down the line when NBC. Again, assuming the matching rights, blah, 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 blah. But NBC, I think, is definitely locked in at this point as far as being a broadcast partner of the NBA starting in the 2025-2026 season. It's going to be on the lead team on the games here, Noah Eagle and Dwayne Wade. Many are speculating that this is something of an audition for both of them for the NBA game subsequently. So just in watching how these games are produced on NBC and Peacock and everything that's going on here. This is the rare circumstance where a network is getting to try out some things a year in advance that are quite possibly going to inform what their game broadcasts are going to be when they step into this role in October of 2025 of televising the NBA.
Right, and it's going to, as we know, NBC does great Olympic coverage, and it's going to be very interesting to see how we have moving forward, how NBC will treat the Olympics, especially with a higher edge of the meaning the NBA race, because it felt like to kind of always the thing during the first initial run of the top two dream teams. And it kind of, then men's basketball got kind of lost because they lost the rights, and now it might pick up again. We'll see. It's going to be a very interesting scenario. And then obviously, you know, there's also going to be discussion of guys like Mike Tirico coming on board, and Bob Fitzgerald, who's known as the Warriors play-by-play guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's done some Olympics in the past, so it would not shock me if they occasionally use him, very similar to how ESPN uses Mark Jones, who covers Sacramento Kings games.
Yeah.
As maybe the second or third guy.
Yeah, very possibly, because they're going to be doing the two games a week during the season. Now, that'll be after Sunday night football when they start doing the Sunday night games. It'll also be the Tuesday night games starting in the 2025-2026 season. But you start to get into the playoffs, and that's where you're going to need more than one team. And so that's where, again, could be two teams, three teams, whatever it's going to be for the number of games that they're going to cover. But yeah, this is the rare instance of, like you said, NBC... ever since the Olympics of, 2000 was the last time that they covered the Olympics when they had the NBA rights. And so ever since then, it's been every 4 years like, oh, it's time for us to start talking about these NBA guys again. And then it wasn't even a lot of the biggest names in the NBA for the last couple of Olympics here, because once Team USA reasserted itself in 2008, it was kind of a slow slide from there in terms of star power. But this is one where, again, one last ride for a lot of the great players from the last generation, a showcase for the up-and-coming players right now, and NBC getting ready to resume their role in about 15 months or so as an NBA broadcast partner. So that will be something for people who are interested in such things, as you and I are, basketball media, what the coverage is of games, etc. This will be a little bit of a sneak preview, I think. But a very, very exciting basketball tournament as part of what should be a very exciting Olympics overall. Of course, too many episodes ago, 1741, we've got our overall coverage preview for the Summer Olympics for all the different events. And on the main page right now at FantasyDraftHelp.com, Fantasy Parasology 2024, the overall fantasy and non-fantasy look at the Olympic Games for this year. But certainly something like this Olympic basketball tournament, as great as it's going to be, it merited its own coverage. And there's only one guy that you can bring in for something like this, and that would be FDH Hoops analyst Ben Chu. So Ben, thank you so much for being here as a part of this day, my friend.
Well, I appreciate it, as always. And still sad that we didn't get to do a Summer League tournament preview, but we'll be fine. I'll just say Golden State in the title game, Pat Spencer MVP.
Well, I'll be rooting against them as assiduously as I possibly can. I never forget, and I was very sad that the Cavs weren't able to take them out. I will say, very encouraged that Tyson for the Cavs there came within one assist of the first triple-double in Summer League in 2 years. So that was good. Less good was watching Amani Bates chuck up all of the threes and not seeing a lot of progression there. But
this is what happens. The Summer League preview coughs up the Summer League tournament preview.
That's right. That's right. Well, you mentioned Summer League. You're going to hear my takes. But so it'll... it'll be funny to see how that wraps up. And but the Olympic basketball will be on a slightly higher plane than NBA Summer League. And we'll be following that to see how it goes. Thank you, Ben Chu. And thank you, everybody, for checking out FDH Lounge Mini Episode 1743.